Hey everyone, welcome back to Purple Row Radio. This edition is for Friday, May the 25th, 2012. I almost said 2007. I don't know why. My name is Greg Stanwood. I'm a staff writer at PurpleRow.com, and this week, once again, I'm joined by Paul Agnello. Paul, how are you?
I'm doing well, Greg. Yourself?
I'm all right.
Yeah?
Considering the state of the team right now.
Yeah. Well, you do exist apart from the team.
Right? True, I think.
Generally. So it's good to hear that the non-team part of you is doing well.
What?
You answered the question as if your entire emotional state is dependent upon.
Gotcha. Yes. I am on the same page now, which is funny because my emotional state is probably tied less into the team than most fans. So.
Yes.
No.
No.
Oh, my.
Man. Oh, it's going to be a long podcast.
It is, actually. This is going to be an incredibly short podcast because there's really almost...
To the seven listeners.
Yes, there's almost nothing to talk about this week. I mean, last week we sort of broke down some of the issues that people were having relating to the team this year and going back to last year in the offseason. I mean, we kind of mined the depths of all that content, and now we're kind of left with another week of losing. And there's really not much more left to say without beating a dead horse or six. So,
yeah. All that's happened is that we get swept by the Mariners.
Yeah, and Kevin Millwood being involved was interesting.
He pitched a pretty good game today, too, I believe.
Cool. I mean, I'm certainly not rooting against Kevin Millwood for any reason.
Why would anyone do that? Ever.
That his nemesis somewhere is rooting against him. The bizarro Kevin Millwood,
yeah.
Who like never got drafted, and yeah,
Mevin Killwood is out there somewhere.
Yeah. So, I had a thought and it vanished. This is how I feel right now. I have no concentration at all. So we can talk about this. I guess the big news relating to the team struggles right now is this recent defense that Dick Monfort put out, basically taking responsibility for the team's failure. Although the big question that I have, and I'm sure other people have, is exactly what does he mean by taking responsibility? He said something along the lines of, like, I'll take it square in between the eyes, or something like
that. If this is anybody's fault, it's mine. I will take it right square between the middle of the eyes, said Monfort.
So what's he expecting, a punch in the face?
I guess so.
Well, okay. Obviously, people have had a lot of problems with this ownership and presidency and so forth for as long as they've been here. The question for me is really, I mean, it's great that he wants to step in and defend Jim Tracy and Dan O'Dowd and so forth, who, I mean, you know, as much criticism as they could possibly get legitimately for putting the team in this position, have certainly also probably been over-criticized because it's not like there's a whole lot going right for this team anywhere right now, whether it's in their control or not. But, okay, so he wants to take responsibility. Usually that means, you know, taking some kind of responsibility, and that means going beyond just saying that the blame lies at the top. I think that if it was thought, for example, that the blame lied at the GM level, that would indicate the firing of the general manager.
Right.
He could fire himself, I guess, but that would be odd. So it's like, okay, so you're taking responsibility, but what sort of accountability comes out of that? I mean, it's
yeah.
Almost
what are the actions emerging from this other than just putting to bed this idea of who should we blame? Which you know, he could say this every day, and people aren't really going to change what they're, I think, you know, saying about the general manager or the manager. So kind of what is, will there be any sort of real manifestation of what he's saying?
Mm-hmm. Right. I think the fear that that sort of strikes into certain people is that for some reason, this is going sort of implying that now, because he is stepping in to defend them and because he wants O'Dowd and Tracy and so forth to have confidence that they're not going to be fired or let go spontaneously sometime in the near future, that he is somehow sort of absorbing, like, all the criticism and just, it's gonna just build up and build up and into this giant ball of nothing, if you will, right? He's just sort of taking these hypothetical punches between the middle of the eyes, as he says, and then, like, what's going to happen after that? There's no real resolution. Hey, I just said your screen name.
Whoa, there it is.
Yes. It's the word of the day.
Resolution. But, I mean, and, you know, and think about it, too, right? And this is how it is with any sort of public relations-ish type of move where, I mean, what would come out, like, even if he had more critical things to say about, like, Dan O'Dowd or Jim Tracy, what would be the point of saying any of it? You know what I mean?
Well, I suppose if he actually intended to change some of the organizational structure here, there might be reason to.
I mean, at that point, just change the structure, and then when you do it, they'll ask why, and you could say things. There would be no reason to kind of say, well, you know, so-and-so's not doing a great job, or their in-game decision-making is whatever, or, you know, drafting this, this, and that, and then, like, kind of have that be the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there would be nothing for them to gain out of doing things that way, I think. But I could be wrong.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to tell. It's just, again, I've never really been, I mean, I'm not harping on anybody, not because I'm particularly attached to the system that we have now in place in the front office. I'm not defending it any more than I'm not attacking it. It's just, this is just such a really bizarre thing to happen, I feel like, because, I mean, it's obviously an attempt to deflect that criticism, but, I mean, I don't really see how, he's so faceless, right? So out of touch with your average everyday fan, as I'm sure 99% of sports team owners are, that it's just sort of awkward that he can speak so clearly with such confidence in his administration and then just say, oh yeah, it's my fault. Just blame me and it's all cool and I'm going to leave everything the way it is and yeah, cool. The end.
Yeah, you know, if you read it, he says that, but it doesn't. All right, well, why should we blame you then, Dick? You know, like, why are you telling us this? But there's nothing. Yeah, it's very. There's no substance here.
No substance, and was that a cat?
Oh yeah, you will periodically hear my cat in the background.
Okay.
That is Ghostface, my cat. He wants to get into podcasting, I think, so. Well, save this for our second podcasting on cats. It's a whole different discussion.
When we start the cat podcast.
Greg and I, after we record this, we have a cat cast that we do for a different blog. So you're mixing them up again, Greg. This is for the later podcast. Greg and Paul's cat cast. You know, you're left wanting more. You're left kind of not coming away any different than you did before you read the piece, necessarily.
Right, and perhaps even more dissatisfied, simply because, again, it just seems such an aimless decision. It's not even a bad decision with, like, a bad outcome. It's just, it's not quite rubbing salt in the wound, but it's like, oh, you've been shot in the arm. I'm okay with that. Right? It's almost like he's saying, I just did a really bad thing, or I'm responsible for a really bad thing. Okay, the end. Now let's just go live our lives.
Yeah.
So yeah, again, we've just kind of been going in circles here over this. It's a bizarre way from my perspective, for anybody to handle this. And I feel like, I mean, it obviously goes without saying that I wish there was some more honesty and forthright outward communication by people like this. But at the same time, I totally understand why there isn't. They don't want to be causing any sort of interpersonal drama that might make things even worse and might actually lead to a firing. I think this just sort of feeds into that. So many people are so frustrated with the, it's not even just the team operation anymore. It's the individuals who they have associated such blame with here. And I guess this is just another.
Wait, what do you mean by that?
Well, like, okay, you have a fan base that is constantly criticizing Jim Tracy's managerial decisions, Dan O'Dowd's general management decisions, and our coaches and our players and so forth. And this isn't any more like, oh, I just don't – I'm dissatisfied with the Rockies, quote unquote. It's now I'm dissatisfied with Jim Tracy. I'm dissatisfied with Dan O'Dowd. I'm dissatisfied with this player and that player and this coach and that coach. It's become sort of a personal in a sense, not to any sort of extreme like I'm going to go hunt them down at their house kind of thing or anything like that. But just they are the faces of the problem. It's not criticizing your favorite team. It's criticizing the people who you don't like on your favorite team. And I think that might be an explanation as to why they thought this sort of approach was important, because it takes the focus off of the faces and tries to revert it back at sort of the clouded, shrouded top team umbrella, if you will. And he's basically trying to take responsibility for the entirety of the frustration. And again, when you redirect that frustration just sort of so into such an empty location, again, it just doesn't really go anywhere. And it just seems one of those things where, again, it's you talk about lateral moves in trades. This is like the ultimate move in trying to take accountability. It didn't make anybody feel better, and it also didn't make the team look better.
Well, you know, hopefully, because obviously, yeah, it's a PR piece, so regardless of what, you know, people are actually thinking behind the scenes, this is going to come out in a very bland way, I think. Do you keep hearing my cat?
Yes. You have a really, really good microphone.
Apparently.
Where is the cat located?
He's outside of my room.
Oh, wow.
And the door's closed.
Yeah, that's very impressive.
He's very loud, I guess. I keep getting distracted by this. I guess, you know, part of it too, or what I'm picking up from this piece here is that there's a greater cognizance, there's a greater understanding at all levels that things need to change, you know, or there's kind of a greater questioning or reexamination of some sort of, I guess, bottom line assumptions that have been guiding, you know, Monfort and Dan O'Dowd's tenure here. So I'm kind of, you know, optimistic that there'll be some sort of change for the positive, although the Rockies seem to be notoriously like old boys, networky. Mm-hmm. In the way that they just kind of have the same people and cycle them around.
Yeah, they certainly are. And I don't know, I can't say from experience because I don't follow the organizational structures so closely of other organizations, but I feel like at least to some extent that is not all that uncommon. I don't know if it is quite to such an extent as – I mean, are there other teams out there who would be so willing to hold on to their cliquish group of, you know, old baseball pals or whatever to this extent? I don't know. It doesn't feel all that unreasonable. And I think that there's always just, I mean, in so many ways, there's so many instances where team fan bases far beyond just the Rockies fan base feel like they're somehow singled out in like some awful way. Like, you get all these comments where fans will be saying, oh, we have to lead the league in, you know, striking out in X situations or something like that. Or, oh, perfect example. The big one the Rockies always get is that we are the worst team ever against crafty left-handed pitchers.
Yeah.
You know, I can say that I have seen that same comment from a lot of fan bases, and there can only be one.
I mean, that's the part. You spend all your time focusing so much on one team that you forget how – you forget the ways that all the other teams suck.
Uh-huh.
Right? So aside from, you know, if you're not, like, one of, like, the five franchises that, like, consistently are kind of in the thick of things – you know, and I don't necessarily think that what the Rockies are going through is that all unique, you know, to them as a franchise. Obviously, some of the challenges that they deal with are unique to them, you know, mainly this altitude issue. Mm-hmm. But if you really, like, and if you read a lot of the comments and stuff like that, that people are making and their ideas for this and that, lots of times what it boils down to is, if you read them between lines, that people are saying, we just need better players.
Which is, which, I mean, is... Right, I mean, that seems like the sort of obvious answer.
But people don't necessarily go right out and say that, and then you get things like they need pitchers who don't walk a lot of guys and induce a lot of ground balls, or you need hitters that have a professional approach that generate a lot of line drives. And it's like, well, there are 29 other teams looking for that exact skill set, or those exact skill sets.
Uh-huh.
Right, so it's like lots of times the remedy for the Rockies is the remedy for, you know, the remaining, like, 26 other baseball clubs that could use help.
Sure.
You know? So, I always kind of come away from these things like, well, we just need better players. That's the solution.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, one thing we can go into here is, I mean, as if we don't have enough topics already, right? No, we have... sort of an interesting situation here where it's so hard to assign blame as it is, right? I mean,
yeah.
I've always maintained, like, my attitude toward the manager position as a whole, the role that the manager takes, is that, you know, managers can lose games, right? They mm-hmm. they can make silly decisions and put the wrong players in at the wrong time and generally weigh down the team in anchor them in a sense. So they're constantly struggling against sinking, while they attempt to win a game. So, but can a manager really win a game? You know, the idea is really that they put the team in, like, the best position so then the players can go out and actually win the game. Point
yeah.
being, a manager can have a distinct visible effect when making bad decisions, but they can make all the right decisions and still lose pretty horribly if they don't have a good enough team.
Yeah.
And so that always leans me in the direction of, well, I would probably prefer that the Rockies adjusted the team before they worried about adjusting the manager. That said, that doesn't mean I'm holding on to Jim Tracy for any reason. I prefer him to Clint Hurdle still, but that's just a totally personal, subjective thing. I don't think that if the team does decide to go another direction there sometime this year, that it's necessarily going to make a change. And I made the same argument in 2009 before we made our last managerial switch, which, ended up being an exception because I went through, I made a fan post somewhere. It's probably still on the site somewhere. This was before I was a writer. I laid out, like, all the last 12 to 15 or so managerial switches, and every single one of them featured an improved record, or, like, maybe there were, like, one or two that didn't, but they were because the managerial change happened with, like, 2 weeks left in the season or something.
I mean, they also tend to happen when the team is at its absolute, like, bottom.
Right, and that's exactly what I was getting at, right?
Yeah.
Because if they fire their terrible team one quarter in, their terrible manager one quarter into the season, and then have three quarters of a season to play, like, more average, right? They have a larger sample
yeah.
size to, like, play in a more expected range. Usually they did improve, but exactly how much of that can be assigned to the manager? Well, in that instance, there were one or two cases where the team actually did feature significant improvement, and, of course, the Rockies ended up being one of those teams that really got fired up as a result of this switch. And again, people always make the argument you could have put anybody in there to manage, and that you would have seen a similar reaction. I don't know if that's true, but point being, something went well, and it did work out. So it's not impossible either. But at the same time, I just always feel compelled to remind people who are so desperate and calling for the manager's head, you know, even if you can't find anybody who would be like an immediate upgrade over Jim Tracy, the big question is always, who would you replace him with? Well, X, maybe Y, I don't know, anybody will do. You know, that's not really necessarily the case. And yeah. and I think that it would satisfy sort of this bloodlust that people have towards just seeing change for change's sake right now. But if I were to prioritize anything right now, it would be taking a really long, hard look at the team now, the way the team looks in a year, the way the team looks in 6 years, and trying to adjust that path to reach a higher peak or so forth than it projects to right now.
Yeah.
Rather than get distracted by, you know, firing Bob Apodaca or something. I feel like there's certainly room to improve the manager, the coaching staff, even the GM. But there's always room to improve those.
Yeah. I kind of just think, I still support Dan O'Dowd. I still kind of don't really like Jim Tracy. But it's, you know, I get what you're saying. It's like, even if they were to find, you know, the best manager on earth, how much does it really help us in the win-loss column? It probably doesn't help us a whole lot, but I think it would be important as like a almost symbolic thing, where in the sense that, you know, if they were to hire such a good manager, you would tend to assume that, like, so what's the thought process that leads to a good manager, right? Like, is this manager kind of creative? Is this manager thinking outside the box? Is this manager not just kind of complying with, you know, traditional baseball wisdom? Do they seem like a proper leader? Things like that. And you would assume that this type of better selection process on the part of the organization, that's like, this managerial hiring is a manifestation of change in other parts of the organization that would then lead to perhaps improved drafts through, you know, hiring better scouts or something like that, or, you know what I mean? So it would be,
sure,
it would be like a surface level.
Yeah. Similar. And I mean, you just mentioned a bunch of sort of almost arbitrary qualities of a managerial style. And the thing is, you find good managers and bad managers in, who have all those traits.
Yeah.
Right? So you have managers who are praised for thinking outside the box, and sometimes and then other managers, and sometimes even those same managers, when they have less success, are criticized for those reasons. Tony La Russa comes to mind. I can't think of a more bipolar reaction to any manager ever. Like, when the Cardinals were doing well, which was more often than not over the past 5 years, I mean, they've won more World Series lately than anybody else since the Red Sox. And at that point, he was just a brilliant tactician who who was considered to be, you know, always willing to go out of his way to find a sneaky additional advantage for the team.
Yeah.
And then in the years or games, and even on the small scale, people will turn on their manager after one game, right? And then they'll say that, you know, he's an overthinker and doesn't should pay more attention to you know, the tried and true methods of good managerialship, and forget about trying to be unique and diverse in the way he wins games. So it's one of those things where it's tough. I still imagine like this happy possibility where, like, if the team has like 3 or 4 good seasons in a row for the first time in their history, that maybe there will be less, quick criticism, that is, in my opinion, not particularly well thought out to any degree. But
it would definitely help.
It would, but would we get rid of it altogether? I don't think we would. I feel like even the best baseball team who wins every game and like for a decade is like they build a dynasty of success. You're still gonna find fans who have a problem with the way it's done.
Yeah, yeah. I'm trying to think of like, see if I can remember what the criticisms were of the Yankees in like 2000. I was too young to really be paying attention, but, you know, I think that just the nature of the criticism shift and they become, they're still not fully thought out, but they just become more petty. You know what I mean? It'd be like focusing on a specific player now or this and that, or like maybe like, lineup. And they're not like, you know, because people are getting pretty angsty now over some really core facets of the organization. So, but even to your point, it would never really go away. But to the rest of us who aren't just going to complain all the time, I think we'd be just thrilled with multiple winning seasons.
Mm-hmm. And the question is, do you think that the Rockies could have multiple winning seasons with Jim Tracy as a manager and Dan O'Dowd as a GM? I don't necessarily know that we couldn't. I feel like, again, as always for me, first and foremost, it always lands on the players.
Yeah.
People want to, I mean, I guess it kind of feels like we go back to the whole taking responsibility thing. People want to sort of envision this sort of methodology in which the blame always rises up the chain of command. Sort of like, you know, I've been watching a lot of JAG lately, the Judge Advocate General series.
I don't even know what that is.
Oh, it's interesting. It's a very interesting study for mid-90s television, but that's also another podcast. And, I mean, that just as an example, there's always these instances where, like, in this military fiction, right, you need the lieutenant always has to take responsibility for the problem that the sergeant had forth, right? Mm-hmm. And then it always ends up at, like, the grand admiral at the top is, like, ultimately has to, like, resign for some silly, petty thing that happened. And so there's sort of a similar application here, right? You have the players who are, I mean, ultimately responsible for like the everyday quote unquote labor of the baseball industry. Mm-hmm. And then you have their bosses or their upper level coach types. And then the manager who's like the boss of the team. And then you go up and up and up. And so it just, I don't feel like the agency works that way, right? The players have so much more agency than anybody else. And again, this feeds back into that whole manager thing I was talking about. You can't blame a manager every time a team loses, because good managers can manage bad teams and lose a lot of games.
Yeah.
And so, again, this isn't meant to be a defense necessarily of this particular manager. I will not shed a tear if they decide to go a different direction. I just don't think that it should be necessarily considered to be a priority just because he is a more important figure on the team than, say, any one individual player on a squad of 25 players. I think the idea here is you need to find a team of players that are going to get that work done. And if you end up continuing to see a pattern where the manager or the boss in this situation is still making it harder for the team to win, then yeah, maybe it's time to go a different direction.
I mean, yeah, and so at some point though, you have to draw the line though between like it being about the players and it being about the guy who was the mastermind behind why those players are on your team.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so, I mean, I think that's what people are kind of trying to figure out too, because I think ultimately, yeah, it's just about the players, and that's what, you know, we don't have enough good ones, right? That's the whole comment that, you know, that we were talking about earlier. And so, you know, why is that? Was it that, you know, a general manager for the most part did the right thing, but then like injuries or just some sort of like weird developmental setback occurred? Or, you know, is there real problems with the whole scouting and drafting and things like that? And we don't really know. We don't really know, and people will complain about our drafts and this and that. But I think if they were to really kind of hang out and look at a lot of teams, there'd be similar you know, rates of failure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, if you ignore, like, the couple of franchises, maybe, like, the Rays, the Rangers, and, like, the Cardinals, and I guess, like, the Braves, who have done really well with drafting, you know, at some point, I think the Rockies just look like every other team, and suddenly the question becomes, well, why can't we be the best?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that's a valid question. But
sure.
There's no...
It also,
we don't know.
It also leads back into that mystery of just, I mean, if we were able to pay more or to devote more analysis to other teams, mm-hmm. and the situations they find themselves in, we might find that we really are not all that different from your average team, or we might find that we really are on the lower end. I don't know. You bring up an interesting thing. This is actually something that we could devote some time to, because I'm curious what your thoughts are on it. One of the more common theories for why we've had such long-term struggles, and beyond just poor drafts, which we're finally now starting to sort of move beyond into out of the drought and into the richer drafts that we had. Mm-hmm. But it's the pitching development, because you know we're obviously really excited going into, you know, 2008 timeframe about Ubaldo Jimenez.
Right.
And, you know, whenever a pitcher throws that hard, there's obviously a chance they're going to fall off sooner than you want. But at the mm-hmm. same time, we saw right in front of us that he degraded, maybe permanently, maybe not. And then now we had a very similar thing happen even quicker with Yelich Chacin, and that's leading some people to question whether or not we as an organization are developing our pitchers to be, whether or not they're major league talent or not actually long-term contributors, right?
Yeah.
And so I'm curious if you have any thoughts on whether or not, just based upon our history with pitchers, they already have an uphill climb being in our organization. How significant of a problem do you think this could be if there's something to it?
Well, so my first part of the answer is I was kind of wondering about this too, but in, I guess, a more macro level, where I was wondering, how come it never seems like we make acquisitions that just, like, kind of immediately pay off? You know what I mean? I guess aside from like, more, like, smaller ones with, like, maybe, like, a Jason Marquis
mm-hmm.
or something, like, you know, we got, like, Scudero now. We have, like, Ramon Hernandez, we got Kadir. Like, no one ever comes to this team and just gets off on a hot start.
Kadir kind of did.
Yeah, kind of. But he wasn't really hitting for power. He was hitting for average pretty well, and that tapered off pretty quickly. And like,
well, if your definition of power is home runs, then no. But if your definition of power is doubles...
Actually, that's true. He is racing with doubles.
Yeah.
But I'm just like, you know, some teams just kind of seem to people could kind of get hot at the same time
mm-hmm.
and things like that. And I feel like it's just been a while since that happened.
Oh, it has. And I mean, you can make the argument it's been quite a while since anything really got all that hot.
Yeah.
I mean,
it always seems like, you know, just as soon as one thing clicks, something else just goes completely wrong. And again,
right.
I guess this just goes back to this idea of if we followed other teams, would we just kind of be drawing the same conclusions? More to your point, when people talk about this, they tend to aggregate across the entire history of the club.
Uh-huh.
And so I personally never, when we're talking about, like, developing players and specifically pitchers, I really never think of anything pre-Humidor. It's just not fair. Like, you're just kind of exaggerating the issue mm-hmm. to make your point, you yeah. know, you're being, like, liberal about it, with just the way you're kind of setting up this argument. So I really wouldn't kind of do that, because it's going to put everything in unfavorable light. And I think, too, for a long time, the team just didn't really know what to do. I'm kind of just thinking that, like, in the past, like, maybe decade, the team has really started to kind of figure out or get some idea of what it is, the type of player they need to be looking for, which, you know, if you keep in mind, even if they had the best plan of all, what type of a success rate are we looking at, right, with identifying these pitchers and these players? So basically what I'm saying, to bring this all together, is that the team has only recently started to figure out something that, in a way, kind of involves a lot of luck. So, mm-hmm. it kind of, you know, to put it in, like, batting terms, it would be like they've just, like, kind of had, like, a really low BABIP with drafts. Sure. Right? I mean, what concerns me most of all is this, like, you know, burgeoning research here that makes it seem like all our pitchers just break down after, like, three seasons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that to me, if that were to be, like, really conclusive...
Right.
I think that would just be, like, the worst thing.
Sure. How could something like that happen? I mean, it almost makes you call into question, like, the conditioning, right? Do we yeah. tire them out? Maybe, in theory, we could be giving all these younger pitchers a lot of attention and then sort of taking off the training wheels too fast and, like, assuming that they can take care of themselves. I haven't seen any evidence of that necessarily, because everything that we see, which, you know, is very, very small piece of the puzzle, seems to imply that Bob Apodaca is really a fairly hands-on pitching coach.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if this is commonplace. Every pitching coach could do this, but the big thing that I always notice about him is, you know, when I go to Rockies games, I generally hang out over by the bullpen for the entire game, if not around 90% of it or so.
Right.
And so when I'm there at the very beginning of the game and the starting pitcher is warming up, he is right on top of them watching every pitch pregame as they're warming up and giving feedback. So, obviously he's sort of the face of the pitching administration here, but there's other factors, right? They have to deal with several different pitching coaches coming up. And then there's also a pitching, a staff of pitching, related, you know, officers of a sort that obviously the team will have around, not necessarily the coach, the players directly, but who are, you know, experts who are paid to look at trends for these sorts of things. And so
right.
they have a team in place to try and stop things like this from happening. So the question is it a coincidence that we have seen so many players like this, you know, really find success and then just fall off? And I mean, it's not just Chacin and Jimenez we've seen this with. We saw it with Aaron Cook. We saw it with Jeff Francis. Every year it seems like we have a new top-of-the-rotation pitcher who lasts about a season and a half, and then they sort of sink and sink and sink a little more until 2 years later they're a fifth starter again.
Yeah, and I think this is kind of, you know, where things are getting interesting now because of first Ubaldo and now Chacin. Because if you think about it, Cook was always kind of injury-prone, and so that's just the way it was with him. And then Jeff Francis, we actually got, like, some pretty good mileage out of. And then he kind of broke down, so, you know, I don't know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But at this point, like, it just seems like we were just getting to really see what Ubaldo was capable of. And with Chacin now that, you know, we're just kind of getting to see the same thing with him. And yet, you know, one's not around anymore, and the other one has just been terrible and taking steps backward. So I think this is like I guess kind of an informational crossroads in a way where we can't necessarily just chalk things up to bad luck. But, you know, who knows? Who really knows what's driving this? Is
mm-hmm.
what is thin air doing to pitchers, you know? We don't really know, and we don't even know if that's the problem.
Right.
So it's a really bad kind of, I think, spot to be in, because it's just like, you know, like all these like phantom injuries and whatever are just like kind of knocking off our players. And then you get this bad publicity saying like pitching at altitude just like completely destroys your arm or something like that.
That's certainly not going to help attract
many
players. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause it's at some point, you know, we got the Humidor and made this place a normal park to pitch in.
Normal-ish.
Yeah. On the high end of the normal range.
Yeah.
And so at that point, like, okay, whatever, like, you know, if players are willing to come to, like, Texas, if players are willing to go to other, you know, like, to Arizona.
Right.
We could probably, with enough time, really just kind of improve our reputation and attract pitchers. But at this point, even if we were to make it as friendly to pitch as Petco, but pitchers are like, well, I could go there and then just, you know, have to basically be out of baseball in like 2 or 3 years. No one's going to do it at all.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So, you know, either the organization needs to really kind of figure out and dispel this notion, or they really need to try to load up on a bunch of pitchers before, before, you know, the reality sets in.
Hmm. Well, it's going to be real interesting and hopefully informative to some degree when we figure out what happens with Chacin.
Yeah.
You know, obviously right now they were worried at first that it was some sort of ineffectiveness. And I mean, if you look at his past, you know, three quarters of a total season between the end of 2011 and the beginning of this year, he has been extraordinarily ineffective. He probably wasn't injured that entire time, but now that we know that he was trying to pitch through injury, you know, I think there's a little bit of hope, not necessarily expectation, of course, but that he will, you know, once he starts to feel better and have his biceps problem fixed, maybe he will return to effectiveness and we won't need to worry about, you know, completely overhauling Chacin and starting from scratch and trying to get him back into a top of the rotation type pitcher. But I, again, I don't know that anybody expects that to happen. And I mean, whether you believe it's a luck related thing and that just seems to be the way things are going, or you think there's a real inherent deep seated problem with our pitching development, it could definitely be a step forward if we get him back sooner rather than later, or it could be just a further indictment if it takes him a while to find himself again.
It's true. It's true. You know, and it's just a bummer because he was like the one stable part of our rotation.
Right. I mean, he had sort of become the face of the rotation because he's the only one post Jimenez that's been there for a significant amount of time. Guthrie and Moyer are new, and then we have all the babies behind them. So and
De La Rosa is somewhere in the ether.
Yeah. Right. I mean, exactly. I didn't even think to bring him up, right? Because he's sort of in purgatory right now.
Yeah.
So, it's frustrating not to have such a conclusion because there's no real definitive answer to all this. But at the same time, it's definitely a relevant thing to discuss because, whether there's a problem or not, there's definitely a pattern. And
that's like that kind of, I think, in a way sums up my overall attitude towards this season, where all I kind of just keep thinking is the only thing that we or just me personally needs is time to kind of really try to understand what our problems are.
Right.
You know, we don't know what Chacin's deal is. We don't know what De La Rosa's deal is. We don't know what any of our young guys are capable of. We know that our offense may not be as good as we thought it was, but we know it's not as bad as it's been. But the only thing that means is basically, like, just kind of hang out and then look up again when it's September and see, you know, what's happened, which is a pretty, you know, unsatisfying answer.
Well, we thought this was going to be a short show. We're already at 45 minutes. So, yeah, that is probably going to be all I can handle for the day in terms of discussing this stuff. So,
in terms of discussing things.
Yeah, no, I still am like 5 hours away from going to sleep, but I feel like I could do it right now.
It took 45 minutes to basically say, let's just hang out and wait until September to see, and then we'll revisit the issues.
Well, I mean, right, the whole, that's exactly what I was getting at when I said it's frustrating not to have a conclusion. We can't have conclusions about these things. We can, it's all just such a difficult thing to try and assess because there's just, it's impossible to know anything when you're trying to manage for the future.
Yeah.
And so that's why the entire operation, just a little bit chaotic for just about anybody. There's a lot of things that can go right and can go wrong for all sorts of different reasons. And I mean, you can do your best to get people who are going to be able to predict and keep on top of it and adjust your team so they never hit a situation like we're in right now, but it's not always going to be inevitable. So we will be back. Well, I'll be back on Friday the 1st of June. Oh, man. It's already June. Wonderful.
Yeah.
And then we, Andrew will have returned, and Paul will be taking a week off.
Yeah, I'm just going to Jamaica for a week.
All right, so until next week, take care.